So good morning. And it's amazing. We have another beautiful, beautiful morning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The forecast rain never even materialized. I can see those mountains. The reflection was really still this morning. Did you see how still the reflection was? And there are a couple of, you know what mergansers are? Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're ducks. When you first see the male, you think it's a loon, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's got a white belly and a dark top. And the female looks like another species, because she looks quite different. She has a rusty crest, and the male has no crest. He's smooth, little kind of iridescent green, and then white. And they're fishing ducks, and they dive like a loon. And the two of them were diving, and then they flew, and you could see them flying with their reflection all the way across the lake. It's a nice sight. So today, we're going to talk about our voices. I think reflect about a voice again, but in terms of using our voices, you know, how do we put our voices out into the world in our daily lives? And by voice here, I mean, you know, different ways of expressing, you know, our actual physical voice, but also our words, our writing, and other ways that we express ourselves too, which is gesture, you know, even just how we carry our bodies. You know, we're speaking with our bodies and our faces, right? So lots of ways. Here's another poet, but it's prose that I'm going to read you. Muriel Rukeyser wrote this: in times of crisis, we summon up our strength. Then, if we are lucky, we are able to call every resource, every forgotten image that can leap to our quickening, every memory that can make us know our power. And this luck is more than it seems to be. It depends on the long preparation of the self to be used. Mm. We are doing that in our practice, a long cultivation, preparation of the self to be a bodhisattva. She continues, in times of the crises of the spirit, we are aware of all our need for each other and our need for ourselves. We call up with all the strength of summoning we have, our fullness. And then we turn, for it is a turning that we have prepared, mm-hmm. and act. And then we turn, for it is a turning that we have prepared, and act. So I really love that image, you know, that turning. And in the longer piece that I don't have with me to share, she tells this story of how towards the end of World War II, I think people were fleeing Europe and on a big ship, and she stood on the ship on deck with I can't tell you the story exactly. Another woman who's fleeing Europe, and she had this image of this huge big ship turning. You know, a big ship takes a while to turn. It can't just go quick right. It has to turn slowly. And she used that as an image for, you know, how do you turn a culture? How do you turn a society? Well, you have to get started and be prepared for a long turn. But, you know, and it's a lovely image that she uses. So turning. It's a book of her writing. I'll put it on the list. Yeah, so it's her writing about writing. It's a great book. And remember, in Zen and in many of the old Zen stories, the koans, there's a turning word. You know, it's a phrase, or sometimes it's a gesture.
That was what I was looking for.
Yeah, it's there. We've got it.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, the turning word. Sometimes it's called a pivot word, but I kind of like turning. I like to call it a turning word, and. So back to that koan that I talked about the first day about Nanchuan and the cat. Mm-hmm. Dogen Zenji, who founded this school of Soto Zen in Japan, went to China, brought it back. He has an inimitable way of talking about koans. He kind of just turns them up and down, upside down and inside out, and makes your head spin. But here's what he says. If I had been Nanchuan, I would have said, if you cannot speak, I will kill it. Even if you can speak, I will kill it. Who would fight over a cat? Who can save a cat? On behalf of the students, I would have said, we are not able to speak, Master. Go ahead and kill the cat. Or I would have said for them, Master, you only know about cutting the cat in two with one stroke, yet you do not know about cutting it into one with one stroke. See, Dogen's playing with him here. And so his main disciple said, how do you cut it into one with one stroke? And he says, the cat itself. Then he said, if I had been Nanchuan, when the students could not answer, I would have released the cat, saying that the students had already spoken. And then he says, an ancient master said, when the great function manifests itself, no fixed rules exist. The great function basically is the interconnected functioning of the universe, the way existence is. No fixed rules exist. So he said, this action of Nanchuan's, that is cutting of the cat, whether he ever actually cut a cat or not, it's a manifestation of the great function of the Buddha Dharma. It is a turning word. So this gesture that he made to get the monks to let go of their squabbling and speak, act, save the cat, was the turning word. So there are times when we must say or enact a turning word to cut through some place that's stuck, that's where we or an interaction is stuck and clinging usually some kind of self-focused agenda or habit pattern, all those different things, right? Squabbling over the cat. Next time you're having a squabble in your household, you might remember Nanchuan and the cat. Don't do anything drastic, but but speak up, right? Speak up. So I'm going to go to... So what I'm doing is drawing on our Zen heritage here for this part, and I'm going to... there's another short excerpt or another short koan in this book, which interestingly is titled "You Have to Say Something." This is by Katagiri Roshi, who was came initially to help out at San Francisco Zen Center to help Suzuki Roshi. He was a young man then. He was a little bit younger than that first generation of teachers, and then he ended up going to Minnesota and founding there's a whole cluster of Zen centers in Minnesota, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and further that are from his lineage, his students. So he's quite beloved, and there's several books by him. He was Natalie Goldberg is the mm-hmm. who wrote all those books about writing. He was her teacher for years. Not always an easy relationship either, but here's what he says. A monk once asked his master, what is the essence of Buddhism? The master said, step forward from the top of a 100-foot pole. Did you ever feel like you're standing on the brink, right? And you know you have to do something. You have to say something. Yeah, but it feels like it's 100 foot high. So that's a koan. But his commentary is this: how can we go forward from the top of the pole? We will die. Can we go backward? No, we cannot. What then does it mean to step forward from the top of a 100-foot pole? Though we are not always conscious of it, we actually face this question daily. As we do become aware of it, we finally ask ourselves, what is life? But there is nothing to say, just silence. This silence is Buddha nature, or suchness, or emptiness. Though everyone experiences this silence, we usually don't notice it because our minds are very busy. Sooner or later, though, we all realize its presence. But then we ask, what is this silence? How can I speak of it? Do I just keep my mouth shut? No, I don't think so. Even if you don't say anything, there is still a problem. Silence, Buddha nature, is not something apart from your life. It compels you to speak. Right? Because we are creatures of language. We are creatures, we are social creatures. So we have to communicate. That is why the Zen master had to speak. He had to say something. He had to speak from that silence, from Buddha nature. How does that work? I'm not going to explain it, but I think sometimes you may feel it, that when you're really grounded and present, undistracted, that you are less likely to say something you will regret or do something you will regret, just to put it simply. I'm not going to go on and on, but I thought we would look at a few stories from our women ancestors of women who spoke up and just have some fun with those. So if you would just pass these around. And these come from the book that I mentioned, The Hidden Lamp, that was compiled by Susan Moon and Florence Kaplow. They collected these 100 stories, and then they asked 100 contemporary women teachers to write short commentaries on them, which was really fun. And I was really sort of scared and pleased to be asked. Imagine sending out 100 stories to 100 women and trying to sort out who was going to do which one. So they didn't do that. They shortlisted. They gave 10 out, a set of 10 to a set of 10, and then say your first, second, and third choice. So I thought that was very clever of them to do it that way. And there's some wonderful stories and some wonderful commentaries in there. I think it would be nice to hear different voices reading. So let's read these aloud, and then I'll let you write for a little bit, and then we'll get in small groups. And then we'll see how the time goes, but we're going to leave time for our closing circle. Okay, so who would like to read the first one? Augusta, thanks.
Soma, India, 6th century. In 6th century India, there was a Buddhist nun named Soma. One day she was deep in meditation beneath a tree in a forest grove. Mara, the lord of delusion, approached her, cloaked in invisibility. He whispered in her ear, "Because a woman has a naturally limited consciousness and the realm of wisdom is hard to reach, no woman has the ability to attain it." Soma recognized Mara and rebuked him, saying, "How could a woman's consciousness be a hindrance when her heart is set on liberation? Am I a woman in these matters or a man? This question has no power over me. Mara, be gone."
Thank you. And the next one, a lot of these are anonymous old women, right? Stories passed on, probably, rather than written, and eventually written. Yeah, so a lot of names are lost. So, next one.
We'll follow the direction of this one. A woman, China, 9th century. One day, Master Zhaozu Kongzhe was outside the monastery and an old woman came along carrying a basket. He asked her, "Where are you going?" The old woman said, "I'm going to steal Zhaozu's bamboo shoots." Zhaozu asked, "What will you do if you run into Zhaozu?" The old woman walked up to Zhaozu and smiled.
Cheeky, huh? Okay, next one. Oh, anyway, I don't know if he comes up again. I don't think so. Zhaozu is. But don't worry. Do your best. Okay, next one. Anybody? Ursula.
Old woman, China, 9th century. Once a monk on pilgrimage met an old woman living alone in a hut. The monk asked, "Do you have any relatives?" She said, "Yes." The monk asked, "Where are they?" She answered, "The mountains, the rivers, and the whole earth, the plants and trees are all my relatives."
All my relations, right? Yeah. Okay, who wants to read the next one?
Hello. Okay. Old woman, China, 8th century. When Master Mazu Dali returned to his native place for a short visit, he was warmly welcomed by his countrymen. But an old woman who used to be his next door neighbor said, "I thought that all the commotion was caused by the visit of some extraordinary personage. In fact, it's none other than that little chap who was the son of Ma, the garbage collector." On hearing this, Mazu improvised the following poem. "I advise you not to return to your native place, for no one can be a sage in his own home. This old woman by the side of the brook still calls me the garbage man's son."
Okay, who wants to read the next one? Nadia? Yeah.
Old woman, China, 9th century. Deshan Xuanjian?
Xuanjian.
Xuanjian was a great scholar of the Diamond Sutra, but he was not a Chan practitioner. He was traveling south in search of the Dharma, carrying his commentaries on the Diamond Sutra with him. In the course of his travels, he came across an old woman on the roadside selling tea and rice cakes. He asked her, "Who are you?" She responded, "I am an old woman selling rice cakes." When he asked if he could buy some refreshments from her, she inquired, "Venerable priest, what are you carrying in your bag?" He said, "I am a scholar of the Diamond Sutra, and here I have all my notes and commentaries." Hearing this, the old woman said, "I have heard that, according to the Diamond Sutra, past mind is ungraspable, present mind is ungraspable, and future mind is ungraspable. So where is the mind that you wish to refresh with rice cakes, O scholar? If you can answer this, you may buy a rice cake from me. If not, you'll have to go elsewhere for a refreshment." Deshan was unable to reply. The old woman then directed him to a Chan master nearby. Deshan burned all his notes and commentaries the next day.
Thank you. Next? Yeah, Jess.
Old woman, China, period, unknown. An old woman in China supported a monk for many years. She built him a hermitage and provided him with food and clothing. After 20 years, she wondered what he had attained and resolved to test him. She summoned a beautiful girl from the village and sent her to the hermit with instructions to embrace him and then ask him how he felt. The girl caressed the monk and asked, "How do you feel just now?" "A withered tree on a cold boulder has no warmth in winter," replied the monk. The girl returned to the old woman and told her what had happened. "What?" the old woman said. "To think I've been supporting an impostor for all these years." She grabbed a stick, hurried to the hermitage, and beat the monk, shouting, "Get out of here!" And then she burned the hermitage to the ground.
Thank you. Next. Yeah.
Sensuryo, Japan, 18th century. In 18th century Japan, a devout layman had a rebellious young daughter named Satsujo. He took her with him whenever he visited Master Hakuin Ekaku in hopes his influence would rub off. Satsujo became devoted to practicing the Dharma, but was a handful even for Hakuin, often asking him a question, then walking out before he could answer. When she was 16, her parents were concerned that she would not find a husband and asked her to pray to Kannon, the Bodhisattva of compassion. She did this day and night during all of her activities. Before long, she experienced an awakening. One day, her father peeked into her room and saw her sitting on a copy of the Lotus Sutra. "What are you doing sitting on this precious scripture?" he shouted. "How is this wonderful sutra different from my acts?" Satsujo refused to marry and wanted to become a nun, but Hakuin persuaded her that her path was to continue practice as a laywoman. He told her, "You comprehend Zen well, but you need to put it into practice. Spirit and form, enlightenment and actualization must be harmonized with the realities of everyday life." She went on to have many children and grandchildren and to be recognized as a teacher.
Okay, keep going. It's a long one.
When she was an old woman, one of her granddaughters died and grieved the loss.
Oh, let's just say she.
And she grieved the loss deeply. An old man from the neighborhood saw her weeping and admonished her. "I heard that you received a certificate of enlightenment from Hakuin himself. So why are you carrying on so?" "Idiot," Satsujo shot back. "My tears are a better memorial than 100 priests chanting lugubriously. The tears commemorate every child that has died. That is exactly how I feel at this moment." The old man left without a word.
Thank you. And last one.
Old woman, Japan, 18th century. An old woman went to hear Master Hakuin give a lecture. He said, "Your mind is the pure land and your body is Amida Buddha. When Amida Buddha appears, mountains, rivers, forests, and fields all radiate a great light. If you want to understand, look into your own heart." The old woman pondered Hakuin's words day and night, waking and sleeping. One day, as she was washing a pot after breakfast, a great light flashed through her mind. She dropped the pot and ran to tell Hakuin, "Amida Buddha filled my whole body. Mountains, rivers, forests, and fields are all shining with light. How wonderful!" She danced for joy. "What are you talking about?" Hakuin asked. "Does the light shine up your asshole?" Small as she was, she gave him a big push, saying, "I can see you're not enlightened yet." They both burst out laughing.
So, these old Zen stories can be kind of irreverent, right? but I love the old women stories, and I hope you do too. And what I thought we could do is take just a few minutes to write, and you can play around with this if you want or not. You might. Is there one of these stories that particularly resonates for you just now? Someone you might want to emulate or not? Someone that you might want to have a conversation with, if you could have a conversation with her. What would you say and what would she say? Or just write about what comes up for you around using your voice in your life right now. Where is there some energy around using your voice? Those are possibilities you can write about. But please take it where it needs to go for you. Okay, so everybody get out your reading materials and just write for a while.